Now that we have completed most of the tools and techniques under performance management systems, I would like to share the table which talks about the advantages and disadvantages of each method. Okay, so if you talk about the written essays, which we have already discussed all of this. Okay, so written essays, what is the advantage of it? It is very, very simple to use. As we mentioned, it's very subjective. Okay, but what are the disadvantages here? More a measure of evaluator's writing ability than of an employee's actual performance. Don't you think so? Because it clearly talks about sometimes if he has not written, if he has not articulated an incident enough, the reader might not get the actual information, right? So hence, it is more of a writing ability from the manager's perspective. So that's the disadvantage. Second is your critical incident. So here, the advantage is that you will have rich examples. Your repository is going to be very, very rich because it will have exact, because as I mentioned to you that the manager must have recorded this at the time when the incident took place. Okay, and behaviorally based. So this will be based on the behavior that is done. And the disadvantages here is that it is very time consuming and it lacks qualification. Right, because you just talk about the incident and what you have behaved, how your behavior was. Then comes your GRS, which is your graphic rating scale. The advantage here is that it provides quantitative and less time consuming than others. Okay, and the data is it's very data oriented, and data reading, the data analysis does not take too much of time. The disadvantage here is that it does not provide in-depth of the job behavior assessed. So that's the limitation here. Okay, it does not provide in-depth analysis here. So it could be very torn, the very superficial level. Then comes your BARS, as I mentioned to you. It focuses on specific and measurable job behaviors. So in BARS, what happens is that you have to, in the beginning itself, you have to be very, very clear enough what are the competencies that you're assessing. What are the 2-3 behaviors that you're taking care of in this entire event? Okay, so while you are interviewing the subordinate or your employee, your focus has to be on those behavior which you have mentioned in the beginning itself. And the disadvantage is that it's a huge process. Now it has become, a lot of organizations have moved into a blended format. But even then, you know, I have been a part of the assessment development centers, and it really, really is time consuming because the entire assimilation, entire integration of the reports take a hell lot of time. So hence it becomes time consuming. So hence a lot of people do not prefer, like I give an example, as I've been a business consultant as well. So what happens is if I take too much of an assessment assignments, I will also have to look at it from the business perspective, right? So assessment does not pay you as much as your business consulting or your training delivery or a design. So assessment takes a lot of time of yours, and the income is not very exciting. So hence a lot of people do not, because it takes a lot of time. So, but it's one of the best tools, I would say, I have used till date. Then comes your multi-person comparisons. So which is, again, the advantage here is that it compares employees with one another. So you do a comparison. Okay, X did so-and-so. In spite of all the resource crunch that he had, he has been able to contribute as much. Whereas you being more seasoned and you being in the organization for longer time, you're not able to fetch that kind of a result. So it does a comparison here. Okay, so that's the advantage. But the advantage, disadvantage here is that it's unwieldy with large number of employees and legal concerns. Okay, so it could get into a legal concern as well because people might not prefer. And if it's a large audience, if we have large number to cover, this is very time consuming. It won't be possible. Okay, then comes your MBO, which I said is most popular. Its advantage is that it focuses on end goals, as it is the organization's vision is taken into consideration, and it is very, very result oriented. And disadvantages here is that, again, here it is time consuming because every quarter the manager has to spend 2 to 3 hours on each, at least an hour and a half to with each subordinate. Okay, so it is time consuming. Hence, every quarter, so monitoring how you're doing, not doing, so corrective actions needs to be taken on time. So hence, it is time consuming. Then the 360 degree appraisal, which is advantages, very, very thorough. And disadvantages here is that it is very time consuming. So this is 360 also, because you have to do a lot of follow up. If four people, one manager and two peers and one subordinate, has been given the assessment to be done, you have to keep following them up unless and until they complete. So there is a huge time factor here. Okay, so these are some of the advantages and disadvantages of the tools and techniques used for performance management system. So now, how do we improve effectiveness of performance assessment? Now, we understood the tools, we have understood what the process is. Now, how do we make it more effective? So use multiple evaluators. Do not use only one evaluator, because if you use only one evaluator, it's a very, very straightforward, straight-jacketed approach that you will get into. So hence, use of multiple evaluators will help. Evaluate selectively. Train the evaluators. If evaluators are freelancers, so you're taking consultants from the market to evaluate, what you do is you need to set the context very well, train them, and then put them on the assessment. Then you're provide employees with due process. Give them the process that how they will go through. What are the step-by-step actions that they have to take? And what does it call for? What each of it means? And why is it important? All of that needs to be. So you need to completely adhere the employee with the due process. Performance feedback is a communication process, basically. It's nothing else, but it's a communication process. It should be ongoing, meaning as adjustments are made based on the information exchange between the manager and the team member. Okay, so this is a feedback that has been based on the manager, whatever he has observed him in the previous year, if it depends whether you're doing an annual appraisal or you're doing a quarterly appraisal. So whatever in that period of concern he has delivered, that will be given as in the form of a feedback. Okay. So this is something over and above something that I would like to give an example, is that I always, when I do this program on receiving feedback to people, there was recently I have done a program for one of the multinationals for giving and receiving feedback, because at the time of appraisal in the month of March. So there, the managers were not very, very comfortable while sharing the feedback, where the organization, goal was very, very clear. Everything was there, but then organization said that we were not doing. Obviously, we were in so much challenges. So in this crisis, we will not be able to give more than 5% increment. But however, the process, the performance appraisal process, has to be as fair as possible. Okay, so they gave very stringent percentages. So hence, the managers already lost motivation and already they were like on low on morale. So the HR organization actually took an initiative of delivering a program for the managers on receiving feedback. So I was doing this program, and there I had mentioned one methodology to give feedback, which used to be called, which I have named it as SBI way of giving feedback. What is the situation? What is the situation today? What is the behavior that you have displayed, and what is the impact that it has created? So while you give the feedback, while you may not be very comfortable, while you may be in two minds, or you are very ambiguous, should I not, will he feel bad, will he leave the job, if he leaves the job, I will again have to find a new person to be able to fill that vacuum. So for a fear of all of this, a lot of managers avoids this. So I have put together a complete program for them to give and receiving feedback. So giving feedback, SBI, as I mentioned to you, just mention what the situation was. In that situation, what was the behavior that was displayed by the subordinate, and what impact did it create? So it becomes very easier for you to methodically, deliver what you intend to say to him. And at the same time, you have not hurt his emotions as well. Okay, so you spoke about the specific, so it has to be very specific. Specific incident, what has happened, specific situation, behavior that you displayed, and the impact it has created. Unless they are not pressured, they prefer to avoid this because most of the, as I mentioned to you, most of the managers will avoid this unless and until the organization mandate has come, deadline has come, saying that without this, we are not moving to the next level. So then only they will sit and do this. Okay. So tendency is to avoid the confrontation in case of a negative feedback. Okay. Is that, you know, if you have a negative feedback for your subordinate, it's all the more reasons for them to not do the feedback. Poor acceptance and blame game for poor performance by employee of negative feedback. So what happens? Some subordinates do not take the feedback very positively. They start giving the excuses. They start giving, you know, the resource crunches that he had. They start giving all kinds of reasons for which he couldn't contribute what he was expected to. Discrepancy is employee and manager perception regarding level of performance even during the positive feedback. Then, ultimately the end goal is to, the end in mind here is to give a constructive feedback so that the feedback is taken well and the subordinate starts working on it and improves in the next cycle of appraisal, he comes out with flying colors. So that's the objective and that's what is constructive feedback all about. Okay, so to aid the manager in feedback sessions, organizations must provide training to managers. As I mentioned to you that I did it for a multinational organization. So they need to provide, the organizations need to provide training to managers in providing, how do we provide the constructive feedback? Because it's one of the very, very critical aspect of their roles. Okay, and as a manager, this is one of the, more than chasing the target, these are some most important competencies that you're expected to have. Constructive feedback will focus on the behaviors rather than the individual. It does not matter who the individual is. It is the behavior that is inside. As I mentioned to you, SBI, behavior. So focus on the behavior rather than the individual. Support with instances from the jobs. Be specific. Do not give a generic saying that, you know, you didn't do well in this quarter. What does that mean? I from 2020, let's say first quarter, in the second quarter, nobody could might have done, very few people might have done well, isn't it? I mean, everybody moved into a different normal altogether. Everybody started working amidst all kinds of crisis. People who had desktops did not even have a laptop with them. Organizations tried to make that possible, but then that was also limited because laptops were not available. So all these things were, challenges. So the instances, so pick up some instances from the job. Have a fair and sincere manager. Be specific rather than general. I have been saying again and again, I always say this, be as specific as possible. Do not make general statements. Be more of counseling than evaluation. Do not be very critical that you evaluate, saying that, you know, hey, you did well here, you didn't do well here. You perform better here, but here you perform poor. So instead of doing that, be a counselor, saying that, you know, I see that you did well here. However, these are the areas I see that you can improve. Do you require any help from my side? I can provide you with that. Do you require some resources? So these are some ways of doing it. Now that post completion of your education, all of you will become, over a period of time, you'll become managers. And these are some of the, competencies that you should work on developing over a period of time. Career management system. Career planning is an important part of your career management. Don't you think so? So if you plan your career well, that's how you kind of cascade your experience, and then finally you're able to reach, either you reach your, achieve your goal, or you reach close to it. So it determines the growth of the individual within the organization based on the organizational requirement that it has. And career planning is basically the self-evaluation and the planning done by the person to have a strong career path. So if you decide that, you know, this is in the next 5 years, I would like to reach the level of senior manager, and I have joined here as an executive. And if you really work hard and if you make your career so well, if you've done everything the way you have planned, if you do not become, either you become what you have planned in the same organization, or else you get a job outside, which actually fulfills your aspiration. So this concept relates to the continuous reiterative process of understanding oneself. It is very, very deep driven within your self-concept. Again, Okay, so how well do you understand yourself? And setting your career goals, revising your skills, and searching for the right career options. Okay, if at all you have done this, if you know that certain, for example, you know, a lot of individuals are there who are very, very high on analytical skills, but they really, really are challenged when it comes to, you know, face-to-face interaction or when it comes to an interpersonal relationship. They face a lot of challenge. But they're very good when it comes to numbers, when it comes to creating trend analysis, when it comes to, you know, putting any analytics together. They're very, very good with it. So you have to, and but however, you have landed in a job where you have to be the face of the department. Okay, you have to speak to a lot of customers, speak to a lot of stakeholders, and influence a lot of people. And that's not your strength area. So what you will do, you will try plan your career backwards, and you will decide this is not something that I would like to do. One is your ability, second is your willingness also. If both are missing here, it's good to change course. So then you probably revisit your skills, you know, and then start applying for the fresh jobs, which is more likely in line with your skill sets. Now, so what is the significance of career management system? So organizational perspective says that building your future leaders and specialists within the organization to ensure a committed workforce, okay, committed leadership. So now, instead of bringing in a lot of laterals or bringing in a lot of managers from outside, what you do is organizations are trying to build on their pipelines. Hence the concept of management trainee, which I'm sure all of you, after passing out, you'll get placed. In my previous organization had about, I was responsible for a pool of close to 160 management trainees from, I think 20, 30 odd B schools. And they all had come together, and the entire career track I was managing. So these people are all doing well. I have left the organizations, we have left who have trained them. We have left the organization, we have been on our own. Some people have grown within the organization, some people have joined somewhere else. But these people have taken on the leadership roles now. It's been 5, 6 years, 7 years down the line. But now they have been looked at. So organization look at them. So why they have been looked at high potentials and why they have been invested so much amount of money, time and resources on them so that they are able to take on additional responsibilities in the near future and build the leadership pipeline. So improving business performance by providing career opportunities and build high committed and productive workforce. One is that it obviously when you invest so much, when you really spend so much of time and efforts on in employees, the employees also build a confidence level in the organization and also create a loyalty factor. Okay, and these people are become long-termer because they start realizing their future within the organization. So you will build a committed workforce over a period of time. And from the organizational perspective, you also become the employer of choice, by the way, okay, in the eyes of external and internal talent, because everybody is preferring now, even from while you're applying also, you've seen so many platforms now shares, even if you apply for a job or Naukri, they will, the analytics will start sharing some data on, the feedback on organizations which have been shared by other candidates and things like that. So as an organization, you become, when you put so much of efforts, deal with so much of fresh talent and, building on leadership pipeline and future leaders, you become a preferred employee for choice. You provide an environment for progress and development. People start realizing their future within the organization. And hence I have seen in one of my previous organizations, I have seen one person who's very, very potential. And I always see him always fetching results all the time, speaking to some of the other clients, stakeholders, across abroad or, the cross functional department. All the time he's busy and he's very, very high potential. And the person has joined, and even in, I have left the organization 2 years back, started my own. And I see this person still working in that organization. When I was working there, he was already some 10, 11, young guy, 10, 11 years old in the organization. He joined there as a management trainee and he has completed 11 years and he has become the vice president. And he's doing very well and he's still continuing to. And it's not that, by default he's there. He's there by choice. He's there by choice. Okay, he's been given. I'm sure the kind of potential that he has, he will be offered multiple jobs in the market, and he's a predominantly a salesperson, and he chooses to continue in that. He has the loyalty for that company because the company has given so much of exposure, given so much of growth. So he is not willing to look at somebody. The moment he says he would like to go, I think in the previous I've heard he was declaring his. Movement, the company said no. They started giving 3-4 other responsibilities and, you know, hiked up his take-home salary and things like that. And then the person stayed back. So this is how it happens. So this is what it becomes when you become an organization of growth. This aids in attracting and retaining the all good talent with you. Okay, all high potential talent gets retained by these kind of actions by the organization. And what is the individual perspective now? So what is this guy, I'll give you the example, what is his perspective now? It's about monitoring your own skill set to ensure that they are up to date as per the growth of the environment. The growth requires, the environment requires a lot of, like in the last 2 years, if you have not adapted yourself, too bad. If you have not adapted yourself with technology, it's too bad about it. I mean, I remember when I started, it was a complete 100% instructor led training that I was giving. Apart from any other consulting assignments, I was, the trainings that I was delivering were all physical training or stand up delivery. Okay, where I had to go to a venue, hotel has been booked, 25-30 participants would be there, do the full day session, have lunch with them, and come back, you know, give the feedback, all of that. Okay. And then come March 2020, I have seen that everything went, you know, shut. All my programs which were planned for the next 6 months, everything was put on a halt or cancelled. Some organizations also shut up, shut down completely. So now what had happened was I was taken aback because mine was a very, very small boutique firm and I did not have too many people with me except one or two resources that I was working with. And to move the entire things into a virtual, because your physical modalities and your virtual modalities are very different. And so it was very difficult. So I was really in a fix for almost a month and a half to two. I just sat and did nothing about it. Just waited for the things to be better. Okay. Then I realized that change, you have to adapt to the change. Change will not adapt you. Right. So that's when I said, okay, either I sit like this and keep expecting that the situation will turn out to be better, because initially nobody knew that this crisis is going to go on for so long. So I anticipated that ek do mahina, you know, like that it will happen, after that it will all recede and I will be back to normal. But that didn't happen. So I waited for almost, spent 2 months of time doing, you know, without doing anything, just expecting that things will be better. So 2 months of typical break I had taken. After about 2 months, when I saw that, you know, anybody that I was reaching out to, everybody said, no, we are not looking at it restarting anytime soon. Office is shut. We have moved to a smaller office. Somebody said, you know, it's completely 100% working virtually. All of that. Okay, finally, I said, okay, fine. You know, it's like a cross for me. That's when I decided it was a really hard way to adapt. But I invested on technology. I moved my whole initiatives, the whole storyboards, the whole learning objectives were completely moved in a virtual format. And by God's grace, in the last 1.5 year now, I have been able to at least acquire three, four major key accounts and doing substantially well in the virtual space. I wouldn't say as good as what others are doing, but yes, you know, for the fact that it is a small startup and for the fact that I started very small, from what I was to what I were, of course, cannot be compared in terms of, but definitely, I have been able to live the new normal. So that's a, you know, pat on the back that I would like to give myself. It's because of the fact that I moved out of my comfort level. Okay, so that's what is important. You have to be continuously keep upgrading your skills. You need to understand your own skills and abilities and the alternative option that is available for future growth. Constantly, if you keep doing the constant churn, then only you'll be able to identify those. It also moves, helps you to move up the leadership ladder and taking on senior and more challenging positions. There are a lot of people who are very, very candid enough to say that, you know what, I have been doing very well in my job. You know, by now you must have seen, but this is where I would like to contribute. Okay, so they take on head on. They just go head on to take responsibilities. And they, on the contrary, you will have people who would be very happy with what they're doing. They would just say, it's okay. As long as you're giving me increment, I'm fine. I don't need additional responsibilities because I want to come. I have child, I have responsibilities. I have in-laws, you know, I have ailing parents at home. So I want to come in a one time and go back at one time. So because I know if I take additional responsibilities, I may not be able to. So hence, I'm fine with that. You require such people also in the organization, by the way, who are not so aspirants, okay, who does not need good. But they are only, all they expect is give me due, you know, respect for what I contribute. That's about it. So they're not very high. So they're not, they don't come under the high potential category. Okay. So organizations will not go helter skelter in developing these people. They are good to have. They are not like great to have also. Okay. So opportunity to be guided by senior leaders as mentors. Okay. Senior leaders have to lead, lead by example as mentors all the time. So that is what is an individual perspective. Now, what are the goals of career management? The goals of career management is to, it has to always continuously be able to ensure that the supply and the flow of talent within the organization for critical roles have to be moving all the time, to be able to cater to all the requirements which have come from time and again, to provide the necessary advice, support and means to employees to realize their potential and they should be able to realize their careers in the organization, okay, with their own skills and abilities. Another goal is to provide top talent input and opportunities to develop and take on larger roles as per their potential. So if you're already a high potential employee who's already done well in the roles that he has been, but he is now ready for the next role, you know, the organization should be able to, so as a goal of a career management, it should be able to provide top talent inputs and opportunities to develop themselves. Ensure clarity of what is expected of each other. Okay, when you come to the organization, when you join the organization, you work in the organization, each one of us have to be clear about each other's expectations. And you need to gain an insight into a sector of employment. According to Greenhouse Callanan and Goldschack, there are four stages of career development. The first stage is your occupational and organizational choices. So in this stage, specific tasks are to be formed and refined. There are a lot of self images that gets developed here. At least a tentative organizational choice, and it should pursue the type of education or training required to implement the choice. So this is the career choice which completely defines what is the occupation that you're going to choose. Okay, whether you're going to move towards a sustainability, whether you want to move towards technology, whether you want to engage yourself in a complete public sector mode. What is it that's so occupational and organizational choices that you create at the start of your career? Okay, so that's your occupational and organizational stage. So in this, once you have decided about the occupation, the second set of tasks that includes here is that selecting and entering into the organization and landing a job that can satisfy your career values and utilize your talents. Okay, so once you've selected the sector, then you decide which organization you want to work for. So you know the sector. For example, you know you want to work in the IT sector. You select the, you know, the 3 to 4, 5 topmost companies that you would like to get associated with. So start applying on those 4, 5 organizations and then tweak yourself or upgrade your skills as per the requirement of the organization, and then you create, you get into one of the jobs, you land up in one of the companies, and you utilize, you're happy, you're satisfied, and you also are able to utilize your talent that you have, because obviously the skill sets have to match with the requirement of the job as well, right? The second is your early career. So now when you join, when you, you know, when you just start your career, it's your immediate career, right? It's your early career. It's your, you know, first experiences, hence makes a lot of importance in life. Okay. And every time that I'm now, when I recall 20 years of my experience, if somebody asks me, what is your first job? It's always very, very close to me. And the second is that it's everything I remember very, very crystal clear. Okay, so hence your early career also makes a lot of, it could be positive, it could be negative, it could be neutral as well, but it's very, very relatable and something which is remembered by most people. Okay, so the earlier, this career stage will encompass two periods here. It first is that it reflects the dominant issues of an early adulthood, because you've just grown, you've just, you know, 20, 24, 25 year old person who has just finished your, you know, graduation, finished your post-graduation and then probably picked up the job. Okay, so it is a number of concerns and characteristics which comes into place here is that individual reappraises the lifestyle and demands that dominated at the early career. Okay, so at that point in time, we are early in life, we are we slowly starting to, you know, achieve things. So hence, the dominant, it reflects the dominant issues of our early adulthood, which will be, you know, it's about finding a space for yourself. Okay, and in the other adult world, you may not be already there because you've just passed out, you are still in the college environment, you've just moved. So hence, a lot of organization take, you know, does training initiatives on campus to corporate. So when you move immediately to a corporate from a campus, what are some of these skill sets that you should, apart from your skill set, what are some of the behaviors that you have to look at? What are some of the do's and don'ts that you have to take care of? So these are some of the examples of those initiatives. So that's your early career. Then in the second, as I said, there are two periods. One is that early career when you just transform from a campus to corporate. The second period is the critical task in this stage is to become established in one's career. Okay, so how do I establish? So at the time, whatever skills that you undertake, whatever role that you undertake will actually sustain over a period of time because that is the time when you're just learning the job. So at the learning level, you'll strengthen it because you'll be working a lot on your basics. You know, where you'll be working, you'll be strengthening your core. Okay, so hence a number of things will take care. So you'll begin to form a lifestyle and you will move into completely adulthood. You'll start taking responsibilities, not only in professionally, but also on your, you know, you may get married, you may get into relationships. And hence you will start taking more responsibility and hence you will move towards a complete adulthood. Now you move from campus to corporate to a full corporate. Okay. And then the stage three, which is your mid-career. And what do you mean by mid-career here? It's just when you have already graduated in your job for a while, you have transformed to a bit, you have sustained your skills, you have learned quite a lot, substantially learned now. So an individual's mid-career is initiated by the midlife transition. You also have a midlife crisis going on at that point in time personally. Okay, and which serves as a bridge between the early and the middle adulthood. Okay, so there's a transition between the two. So you may tend to, because you're doing this for so long, so what happens is over a period of time, you just have a tendency to move towards a tendency towards moving to a early adulthood as well. Okay, so hence you sometimes, you become very conflicting at times. Okay, so that's the midlife. You don't know what to do. Sometimes you change course as well. Sometimes you change your job. Sometimes you look for a promotion as well. If that doesn't happen, you start looking for a job outside. You know, or you start looking for a change within the organization in some cross-functional department. Next is your... the individual will always it is necessary to begin to form a lifestyle to move into a we spoke about this. So you, it's a very, very important point here is that you completely adopt and adapt to the complete adulthood. Okay, so that's one of the major things. So hence, it sometimes becomes very demotivating to people as well because you're moving, you're on a transition phase. Okay, now the stage four, which is the last stage of your career, the late career. So there are two major tasks dominate at this stage. Okay, the first is that, you know, the individual must continue to be productive. And he has to be productive enough to be able to contribute to the organization. Okay, so hence, so in order to, so if you do that, if you're contributing to the organization still, regardless of your age or the stage of your career, you will keep having your self-image and dignity will be intact. And you will be taken seriously and you'll be getting what you the respect that you deserve. Okay, so that's the first task of your late career. And the second one is that, second phase is that, you know, you must anticipate and plan for your effective retirement. Okay, now you know that you're coming to an end, almost another 2-3 years of job is left, you know, closing to, you know, you're reaching almost 60 and you're, say, for example, in a public sector or a government sector, you're working and you, you know, 60 years, you will retire. So what you'll do is from 57 onwards, you will still, your last 3 years of your career, you will start planning for your retirement. You will start developing people under your team so that you're, you know, you have been succeeded well and the company is also not having any loss. Continues to follow, complete, do your, continue your legacy and then also, you know, do similar kind of work what you have done in the past. And also at the same time, you do not get devastated because of the, you know, post-retirement. You know, what happens, a lot of people go through a lot of vacuum because you're so used to you know working for 30-35 years in your life, and suddenly when the retirement comes, you know your health goes in for a toss because of the loneliness or the stressors that builds over a period of time. So hence you need to be preparing for that also after retirement. These are some engagements that I will look at after retirement. These are some of the things that I would like to do. These are some of the things that I would like to plan for myself. So those are the things that you need to plan. So that's what is your late career all about. Thank you so much.